Welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host and producer, delighted to be with you today on January 15th, 2014, broadcasting live out of the Oakland Hills in California at Studio132.com with BZ Lewis, our fantastic sound engineer and excellent musician, winner of 6 Emmys. And today we are talking about mob programming with Woody Zhu. So the Global Product Management Talk is a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can find us and our archives of over 100 discussions at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That is our Twitter handle, at PRODMGMTTALK, and our hashtag, if you're tweeting, it is pound, PRODMGMTTALK. The Global Product Management Talk is a regularly scheduled broadcast discussion of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about product excellence, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and methodology. Today is a full hour with myself, and I talk weekly with thought leaders from the San Francisco Bay Area and beyond, including experts, startup practitioners, passionate product people, all about forwarding product excellence. You can find out more at startupproduct.com under broadcast. There are also other episodes and programs available from Brain Rants from Brainmates Down Under in Australia, and the Competitive Intel Podcast with Sean Campbell of Cascade Insights. So, I want to thank our sponsors, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, founded in 1998, promoting worldwide excellence in product management education with training, certifications, and professional networking opportunities. Check them out at www.aipmm.com, also on Twitter at AIPMM, and they have a great webinar series on Fridays. Thank you to Startup Product Academy, forwarding product leaders with innovative approaches and experiential learning opportunities at startupproduct.com. So there's some really exciting things happening in the startup product world. I want to give a shout out to our new community members in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Ty Hallock, who's the CEO of Top Floor Studio, is bringing Startup Product Talks to Silicon Mountain and starting a community there. Shout out to our new members. Very excited about what's being planned there. You can find them at meetup.com/startupproductasheville. And they're also, you can find them on the site at startupproduct.com under meetups. And shout out to their location sponsor, Asheville Music Hall, who is going to host the meetups. It's a music hall and one-stop deli. It looks great. Can't wait to get out there and look forward to Ty. You're coming in to do some coursework at Stanford in the next couple of months. Also want to do a shout out to a new member of the Startup Product Academy Fellows, Piali Sikar, who is just coming in from doing work in Cambridge, Massachusetts. For the past 5 months, she's worked with startups at Mass Challenge, a Boston-based accelerator, and she piloted a user testing program for startups, and she's going to bring all that great information and knowledge to Startup Product Academy. Tonight is very exciting. Myself and Amy Lighthoder, we are addressing the the Silicon Valley Agile Leadership Network. Shout out to Stacy and Dennis Britton of the Silicon Valley Agile Leadership Network. We're going to be at LinkedIn tonight And we're doing a Agile Product Management and Agile Teaching Exposition, which will be an experiential, interactive discussion with the attendants. As we do an experiment in forwarding teaching in an agile manner to cross-functions. All of this information is available at sfproducttalks.com as well as in the calendar on Startup Products. So today we are talking with Woody Zhu, who is an application development manager and agile coach at Hunter Industries, about the power and mechanics of mob programming. So mob programming is a development practice, a software development practice, where the whole team works on the same thing at the same time, in the same space, and at the same computer. It is really amazing. The whole team approach to doing all the work the team does, including coding, designing, testing, and working with the customer. So he talks about the practice and explores the benefits of some ideas you can try in your own team. So let me tell you about Woody. He's been programming computers for 30 years. He's an agile coach. Over the last 15 years, he's worked coaching, agile, training, and as an extreme programmer. He believes code must be simple, clean, and maintainable to realize the agile promise of responding to change. He spent many years as an artist, designer, manufacturer of graphics for televised sporting events where deadlines are for real. You can follow Woody on Twitter at Woody Zuill. That is W-O-O-D-Y-Z-U-I-L-L. And also very excited that Woody will be in San Francisco the first week in February, and he is giving a course on mob programming at Tagged Offices in downtown San Francisco. You can find out about those in many places. Best is to go to mobprogramming.org, mobprogramming.org. We also have it on the calendar at startupproduct.com. And he is also, let's see, I'm looking at a list of agile events in Southern California. Let's bring Woody. Are you there? Come on, and I'll have you speak about these events and with Diana. And also, he'll be speaking at Twitter on February 4th. This is open to everyone. It's free. He'll be speaking about mob programming. You can find out and register for it at SF Product Talks. Woody, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Cindy?
Okay. So I think that covers my whole front end.
Great.
I did want to do a shout-out to Luan Falco, who introduced me to you. And I know Amy Lighthoder came down and did her Agile Magic Gemba tour with you, which I'm very excited about. And
yes.
And shout out also to Dennis Britton. I don't know if you know Dennis, but we'll get you hooked up afterwards.
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited, and I also want to thank Llewellyn. I guess you did a podcast with him a little bit ago. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Excellent. So I tell everybody, be sure you follow him in Twitter and any other way you can. He's a really great resource, a brilliant person, but also very eager to share and has a lot of great things he's working on all the time. So I have a lot of respect for Llewellyn, and I think he's made a big difference to the Southern California Agile community as well as across the country and the world.
Yeah, he is a very generous guy.
Let me explore. What's that?
He's very generous. So I'm going to tweet out his Twitter handle.
Yes, he's very sharing.
Yeah, I got to spend a whole day with him. We had a blast.
Cool. So we want to talk about mob programming, but did you want to cover the events first, or do you just want to go on?
So tell us about these great events in the community in San Diego, and Diana Larson. Give us a little bit about what retrospectives are And then we'll jump into mob programming.
Okay, that sounds great. So for those of you who don't know who Diana Larson is, her and Esther Derby wrote a book called, I think it's called Agile Retrospectives, Making Good Teams Great. That's in print still. It's a wonderful book. I read it several years ago. And I've been following Diana since 2007 when I first attended an event she facilitated. I think it was part of the Scrum gathering that was in Portland back then. I think that was when it was. I don't remember the exact date. It could have been earlier. But anyways, and she just mesmerized me as she facilitated this. And so every chance I get to go to some event she's at, I do. But we had invited her to come speak at Agile San Diego, which is our San Diego local Agile meetup group. And she said, she asked if maybe we could do a workshop. So we're doing a workshop. And that's going to be on March 6th. Here in San Diego. You can get info at my website about that, the zool.us link that will probably be available with this the notes for this podcast. And that'll be a whole day event, very economical, $99. And I'm just inviting everybody. I think you'll have a great time. Diana is the probably one of the best experts on Agile retrospectives and is always coming up with great new things like the accelerated learning things she's working on now and the liftoff and so on. So that's coming up soon. On January 22nd, there is this group in Irvine called Agile SoCal, and I'll be presenting there with probably most, if not all, of our mob programming team here from Hunter, and we'll be giving a demonstration as well as a talk on what mob programming is. And that's January 22nd. You have to RSVP to attend. It's free, but and you can probably see that on the website as well. And then let's see what else. So coming up way far away in September is our Agile Open SoCal. I just want to make a mention. It's going to be September 11th and 12th. And just mark your calendars if you're in the area. It's very inexpensive, great way to spend a couple days with a lot of dedicated and very open and sharing Agile experts as well as beginners. It's everybody. It's an open space style event, which if you've never been to one, I don't know if I could explain it quick enough here, but it's a fascinating way to approach a kind of a mini unconference where whoever comes decides what we'd like to talk about, and we arrange built around the people who attend. So I'm not sure. I think that covered all
awesome.
The notes.
Yeah. And I will...
Do we want to talk a little bit about... Oh, go ahead.
So I had posted questions out, but why don't we start with some definitions and... You know, my understanding is that mob programming falls under extreme programming, which is not a distinct, totally aligned with an agile approach. But why don't you give us some more definitions?
Sure. Sure. So, well, let's start first with, we're talking about essentially Agile. And if we think of Agile software development as sort of a, I think of it as a set of principles and values by which we can guide our software development work and practices. So under that umbrella of Agile, perhaps, is extreme programming and things like Scrum and other branded or named sets of practices. Agile itself really doesn't dictate any practices. The Agile Manifesto, this set of values and principles, is just some guidelines on how we think about our work. So when extreme programming was first came along, there wasn't any such term as Agile. And all of these processes were kind of talked about as being lightweight processes as opposed to the more heavyweight processes that have been traditionally used of phased or gated software development. Sometimes people talk about that as being waterfall. So extreme programming is a kind of a set of practices, but also some values or principles as well. And one of those practices is pair programming, where two people will sit together at a computer and discuss the work they're doing and kind of code it up together. Mob programming itself, I don't think of as a practice as much as also a way to think about our work, but we use practices within it to make it easy to do. So that's a little bit of a few definitions. Is there something else you might want to clear up?
So that's very interesting. So I just want to just say that paired programming is pretty, it was kind of mind-blowing for me when I saw that it wasn't two people sitting next to each other, parallel programming, working on the same program on their own devices. It was two people sharing one device, taking turns manning the keyboard, and both coding at the same time. So they're essentially coding and debugging simultaneously. And I just thought that was beautiful. You know, I think of coding as similar to writing music, and programmers are the musicians. So it was just, it was like, I just thought it was lovely to see, and I've used that approach to developing content, in developing narrative and writing, about products and other things beyond code. So when I saw mob programming, it just really blew my mind. It's five people working on one machine, and I've watched the video now many times, and it was Llewellyn who first mentioned it, and to me, you know, taking it into out of software programming, it almost looks like jazz musicians working on, you know, playing one instrument together.
Ah, that's interesting. There are a lot of parallels to other ways that people work throughout all kinds of different endeavors, including music. But the basic idea in software development is not using a keyboard. It is thinking. So thinking is, you know, that's where we really work. The keyboard is just the way we get our thinking into the computer. So there's an agile value that we really value individuals and interactions over processes and tools. And what I take that to mean, my own interpretation of that is, if we are going to use any particular tool or process, it must support our ability to work better as individuals interacting with other individuals. So the end result should be that whatever practices we might adopt, it will make it better for us to do what we as humans can do is think and interact with others. And to take that to its logical end, for me, at every step, almost every day, when I'm considering some action or practice we're going to take, I'll just look back in my mind and make sure for myself that I think this probably is supporting that idea. This is going to make it easier for us to work as an individual and to interact with the other individuals. Now, I don't want to belabor that too much, but the concept with mob programming is very simple. Since much of what we have to do is more about thinking than it is about typing something into the computer, then let's really find a way to make it a more powerful environment, a more enabling environment for doing the thinking we want to do. So that kind of brings up a question a lot of people ask. Well, how can you think better when there are more than one person? Isn't that more distractive, perhaps? And I don't know whether it really is or isn't. I'm sure for some people it definitely is, and for others it naturally might not be. However, all I've basically done is noticed that we get a lot more, and I think a lot better work done when we work this way. So I can't really give anybody any numbers or proof. That's just what I observe and what the team has observed. Remember, that's something I want to cover kind of quickly here, and that is that we didn't sit down and say, you know what we should do? Let's all sit together and work at one computer. It wasn't a matter of us thinking about a process we might want to try and then experimenting with it and trying it. it was sort of the opposite. We had gathered together to do to look at some work that we needed to do, some complex work that no one person knew all about. And since we do pair programming and we share the keyboard, it was kind of natural to start handing it around amongst the whole group. And we were looking at a big projecting the monitor up on the screen, up on the wall, so to speak. And as we started passing the keyboard around and doing the work, we started noticing we were getting a lot done. Somebody would say, oh, I know where that's at in the database. And someone else would say, oh, I know the problem in the code at that spot. And as we shared this information, at the end of about an hour, we had to relinquish our meeting room. Our meeting room had someone else scheduled to come in, so we went on our scheduling system here, found another empty meeting room. We got a couple dozen around the company, and we rushed over to that one and continued working. Now, we do retrospectives at the end of every day, and I'll explain about that in a minute, perhaps. But what we found was that at the end of that day, we really liked what we were doing. It seemed like we were really punching through the code quickly. So we just went ahead and scheduled rooms as best we could for the next day, and we haven't stopped since. We've moved to our own permanent area, but we've basically been working this way now for 2.5 years.
Wow. So that's lovely. It was a natural outgrowth. Now, I would assume, or let me ask you, was there already a cohesive working relationship with the people in this group that enabled this to be a natural outgrowth of collaborating?
That's a very good question, because a lot of people assume that when I do talk about this, kind of assume that the people have to be good at getting along before you can even do this. And so this particular group of people I really enjoy working with, and everybody gets along very well. However, it's in the working together that we've learned to work really well together. So I'd kind of put it this way. We recognized very quickly that we had to have some kind of a ground rule about how we'll act towards each other to make this work. And so we have this concept that we've sort of... it's kind of like a motto, I don't know, but we always work with kindness, consideration, and respect for each other. And without that, maybe if this wouldn't work so well. But I want to emphasize, I'm easily frustrated, impatient. I start rolling my eyes and using tones that show that I'm upset pretty quickly. And so I need more work on this than probably anybody. But when you work with people who are all trying to extend kindness and respect to each other, somebody's going to take me aside and say, Woody, you know, didn't you notice you were hurting their feelings there? Or didn't you notice you were sounding a little crabby? So I'm learning to be a better person through the process of working together with other people this closely. So maybe it's a two-way street, or there's two sides to this. It's good if you can bring emotional maturity or the ability to work together to this. But you also learn to do it better once you start doing this.
Right. So it's a continuous learning. And I think those ground rules are essential in every professional environment, but they certainly enable building trust, and also the openness and encouragement to speak honestly, to be able to give feedback. And that would also bring up another thing, that everyone is equal in a mob programming group. Is that true? It doesn't sound like, one person is the authority or the boss over the others. There's like an equal playing field.
Well, that's a good point as well. That's very true. That's sort of how we operate. We have a couple people who are true experts in a broad spectrum of software development, but all of us have our own abilities that we bring to the plate. And what this comes down to, it maybe, is this concept of self-organizing teams. So a self-organizing group, the people involved will be able to see when they feel that they can best contribute, and they'll make sure they contribute that part. And on the other hand, if somebody is doing some work and they recognize, hey, I think that, you know, Dexter knows about this, and they'll just turn to him and say, hey, I think you're more of an expert on this. Can you guide us for a while? Maybe we need to explain a little bit how mob programming works. Should I do that first?
Please, please. And we actually do have, if I want to be more formal, let's see, that would be Q1. Woody, what is mob programming?
Okay, so with mob programming, we, you know, as you introduced, we basically all sit at one computer. However, it's important that we're not all crouching around a small couple monitors, so we use projectors to project the monitors up on a large wall area in our work area. We all sit very comfortably facing that, and we have one computer that all code goes through to get into our code base. And we have basically two keyboards of different configurations because people prefer different ways to use a keyboard. One's more ergonomic. And so a couple mice so that you can wheel yourself up in your office chair to the work area and take over whenever it's your turn to be typing. Now, we have this concept. So if you thought of a keyboard as being sort of a dumb input device, it can't do anything without a human punching some buttons. So we also think then that we have a smart input device, and we call that the driver. Now the driver, that role on the team is rotated every 15 minutes. So nobody is sitting at a keyboard for more than 15 minutes every hour and a half, unless they want to, and I'll explain that in a minute. But you've got your keyboard. So we've got a dumb input device and a smart input device. And the job of the what we call the driver is to hear what the rest of the group is deciding about how our code should be, what we're designing, and they input it in. They translate the human ideas into code. Now, that who are those other people? Well, we call that the navigators, and that's the rest of the team. So if there happens to be, like we have right now, six people on our team, at any one point, there's one person sitting at the keyboard, and everyone else is discussing the work that we're doing. As soon as they have a solid concept of something that can go to code, they express it and into the driver's ears. So out of somebody's mouth comes the ideas. Into somebody's ears, the driver's, goes the ideas, and they convert it to code. So that's the basic concept. Because mainly the job of programming is thinking. It's not even, in a lot of ways, knowledge. Often it is, but it's more thinking about and using some of the knowledge that we have about getting a solution to whatever we're working on that day. So that's the basic concept. However, we rotate through every 15 minutes. Now, we don't recommend necessarily anybody else use 15 minutes. That's what works for our team. You could take 4 minutes or 5 minutes for your rotation. You would switch it up. Somebody else sits down at the keyboard. We have a timer that we've written on our that we run on our computers, and it just blanks out the screens, and it says, you know, whoever's next in line, because everybody's name is input in the system, they move their chair up to the keyboard, and they become the driver for the next 15 minutes. I hope I explained that well, but you can see it a lot better by going to go see that YouTube video of us working, perhaps.
Yeah.
So that's the basic idea.
Great. Yeah. I posted the URL for the video on Vimeo. Is that the same one as on YouTube?
No, we have a YouTube video that is shown in that video that's on Vimeo. That's the one. That's the 1 hour presentation. This one is a 3 minute video of us working a full day. It's like time lapse, and we work a full day, and you just get to see us rotate through the day.
I'll post that. That video is actually out on a Meetup, and it was in the press release, the YouTube one.
Excellent. So that's sort of it in a nutshell. It's hard to describe it over the phone like this, but that's the basic idea.
Right. And
so do you think that was sufficient?
So following up with that, and we do have some Twitter people and listening in. So Q2, I'm not sure we covered it. I'm going to post it. How can five people be effective working on one thing? You somewhat addressed it.
Yeah.
But if you want to go further.
Yeah, I can cover that, I think, a little bit better. Here's the thing. Our observation was that almost immediately we were making very good progress on that particular project. And as we became more and more sophisticated with this way of working, we found little ins and outs of how to make it work better for us. But I want to go back to this basic idea that we observed it was being very effective. Now, you can measure how much output you can do from a team, but I've never found a way to really measure that well, to compare things so accurately that we can really state, hey, we got 12% increase or 50% increase or anything like that. However, I also do feel that we can get a good sense for how much better we're doing just as we watch work getting through. But we noticed a great number of benefits. Productivity is only one of the things we need from our team. We need to do high quality work. We need to be working on the right things. We need to be able to make decisions quickly and pay as little as possible for the bad decisions we often make. So ways to reverse course or change course whenever necessary. We have to find ways to block ourselves from being thrashed or lessen the results of being thrashed. That's when perhaps somebody comes to the team and says, hey, we need this person for something else for a while. You might see in this working model, we don't lose our way often. And because we pretty much respect each other, we almost never fight about anything. I can't think of any kind of a fight or argument we've had since we started doing this. It's sort of like if somebody has an idea and somebody else says, oh, wait, I have a better idea, the whole team will just kind of say, well, let's try one, and then we'll try the other one. And so there's almost never something that's blocking us from getting our work done. So it's hard to say, because productivity is just one little part of what we want out of our work. We turn out a lot of work, and we do very well with not introducing bugs into the system. I would say in the 2.5 years since we've been doing this, we haven't even introduced a handful, meaning 3 or 4 bugs, into any of our production code. Very little problems. It's like a continuous code review, a continuous design session, a continuous testing session. Everything's always happening all at the same time.
Very little bugs. And the other thing is, so you're shipping continuously. How often are you pushing out?
So that depends on exactly which project we're working on. We serve a number of departments here at Hunter. So we have to sort of divvy up our time anyways. And, of course, Agile is perfect for that, because an Agile approach pretty much allows us to get something that's deliverable very, very quickly. It's only an increment of the final project, if you want to think that projects can have a finality to them. But basically what we need to do is deliver a little bit and a little here and a little bit there, and this model works extremely well for that. So we deliver 2 or 3 times a day when we got the right project for that. And then we have some projects that you just can't do that with. So we attempt to get them delivered into a production environment that is currently just being used for people who are testing or reviewing things throughout the company, who are going to use the project. And when they're ready, they feel it's ready for something that they want to release it for, then we can. So in some cases, we can release daily or even several times. In other cases, not. But I have no fear that you couldn't do this in any environment.
Awesome.
Okay. So I'll let you keep asking questions, because I'll tend to just keep going off every tangent I can think of, and you can keep me focused that way.
Great. And I just want to give a shout-out to a couple of tweeters. Hi, Christy Nadano, and hi, Gil Zibberfield, who are listening live and retweeting. So our Q3 was, what is the underlying theory that makes this form of development so effective? And so it's very interesting to me, Woody, that I didn't realize that this was totally an iterative approach. You didn't sit down and say, hey, how can we work together more effectively and let's try it out and experiment? It actually happened organically.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, that's really the story of this. The mob programming itself as wonderful as we have found it, isn't something that we recommend to anyone else. You mentioned Llewellyn earlier. Llewellyn and I have been, go back quite a ways, and we had been doing coding dojos using a pattern that's very similar to this, to do demonstrations and to have participants engage in learning some coding things. And then I had asked Llewellyn to come in and do some technical training for some of the group here, and he saw that we were working with this sort of Randori method, which we call mob programming, all the time. That was our, that's how we work 8 hours a day. And he started expressing that to other people as he went to other clients and so on. And so what had happened was that at the Agile 2012 in Dallas, several people came up to me that Llewellyn had been talking with and said, hey, what? Show us what this thing that you're doing that Llewellyn's talking about. So by the end of the first day there, about 15 people had come up and asked about it. So I sat down, I actually emailed the gang back here at Hunter and had them take some photos and write down a list of why they liked this so I could make a quick mini presentation during the Open Jam, their little Open Jam sessions there, and I did so. So that just grew the interest in this more, so people started asking, they would email me and say, hey, can you come show us or talk about it at our group? And so I guess what I'm saying is we are just sharing this idea. We're not necessarily recommending it. It's just something we do that people seem to be interested in. But on the other hand, there is something we really do recommend, and that's to get good at reflecting, tuning, and adjusting. So you can just take this concept of getting good at retrospectives and use that to find your own best way of working, which, of course, is always going to change. But you might... You can hear about somebody like us who's doing this thing, which is mob programming, and you might find you like it. But on the other hand, there could be some advancements you'll make that are way beyond what we're doing. So you just got to get good at recognizing what's good, paying attention, recognizing this is the way I like to think about it. You got to turn up the good. We found that a lot of the things that we kind of thought we had problems with just sort of disappeared. Every time we just turned up the good, something of bad would just fade away. It would dissipate. So it's a very iterative thing. You just continuously improve. I've heard it expressed to me a lot of different ways, but in a nutshell, that's sort of what extreme programming is notice what's good and turn it up.
Which works across the board. The thing is having the ability to distinguish what's good. Having the right measurement ability to recognize it.
So I would say this. I think we can feel that. I think we know when something's going good. I think putting the emphasis on how are we going to measure things getting better is a lot less meaningful to me. For example, when I was a kid and I had an old Plymouth station wagon, I wanted to see how fast the thing would go. And I could just, without looking at the speedometer, because I was going too fast to look away from the road, I could feel when I was going too fast. And I think that we can feel when we're going too slow. We can feel what's right. We don't need to measure it all the time or necessarily. I would say for this kind of work, trying to get picky about measuring might be, you know, a destructive or dysfunctional approach. I'm not saying it actually is. Somebody probably could prove me wrong. There's a lot of science out there that proves everything that I think is wrong, so I just ignore it.
Awesome. Okay.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Well,
so, but let me make a clear point. In the Agile world, they have the principle that we build our projects on motivated individuals. We give them the environment and support they need and trust them to get the work done. So in this particular case, this was merely a matter of allowing the team to be able to express to each other, hey, this is working, and making sure they had the freedom to make it work as best as they can. That's what we do. We don't need to look at a team and say, oh, you need to fix this and you need to change that. The team can figure all that out. And I think that's ultimately why this has worked so well for us.
Excellent. Okay. So our next Our next question, I think we've addressed somewhat, but I think you can go deeper, which is, what are the rules for successful collaboration? So you talked about some of the ground rules of which would be ground rules for working and collaborating in any environment of kindness, respect, honesty. But you could be kind, respectful, and honest and still not be successful at mob programming.
So, yes.
So what other things might we be able to call out that would be important?
Well, these are going to seem rather mundane, but as long as we can work together as a team and pay attention to getting better at the things we need to be doing. For example, if I'm not good at explaining technical concepts, then while I'm working with the team, that skill is going to be building in me because I'll hear other people expressing them and I'll be getting lots of practice expressing them. Maybe I have to get better at listening, and sometimes on a team, in this kind of environment, you get a lot more practice listening because you've got to give the other people the chance to finish their thoughts rather than just jumping in the middle. And so a lot of the things that you need to do to make this work, you just kind of naturally get better at if everybody is kind and respectful and considerate of each other. So it just almost automatically happens. However, we do notice a lot of things going on. Just as a simple example, whenever somebody, well, I'll use this term, we are exposed in this environment. That means that any frailties or any inabilities we have are going to show up immediately. You cannot hide. So that means that the rest of the team can't be a little, they really can't make fun of anyone else or belittle anyone for their lack of ability because they're going to be exposed as well. So we better be sure it's like do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because in a minute you're going to make the same, some equally boneheaded decision or show something that you're not good at. So part of this is recognizing that we're going to learn to get better every day. So it's just an idea of, you know, we're always striving for better, never for perfection, just we know we can get better. But there are a couple other little things. And one is that, and so this is going to seem extremely mundane, you've got to be comfortable physically. So I've watched a lot of people paraprogramming, and they get cricks in their neck and their back gets out of alignment because they're kind of crouching around a keyboard. And so what we do, we've paid a lot of attention to that. The height that we project on the wall, we've fine-tuned over time. We've got it set up where everybody can sit very comfortably throughout the day. We invite everyone, of course, to stand up frequently, move about. We have a heuristic about working with the team. If you don't feel that you're contributing something right now or getting value out of it somehow right now, then it might be a good time to go off and maybe work at your own desk and do some expense report or something else, or take a walk, or zone out for a while. You know, there's no need to always be part of the mob. We do have many other computers in the mobbing area, and at any one time there might be two or three people quickly Googling some, or AltaVistaing or whatever you want to use for your search engine, something we're trying to learn about, or somebody might be trying some little code thing that he's going to express to the team, or she's going to say in a minute, you know, hey, I had this idea. So we're not all 100% focused on the work we're doing, but we are all peripherally involved throughout most of the work. So I covered a few things there.
Yeah.
The ergonomics, I think, though, is one thing people often miss, and I've watched other people doing mob programming, or they've sent me videos of them doing it, and I see them sitting around a conference table with a screen at one end, and I remember the days when we used to do that, and I go, I hope they realize soon that that's not so good on your shoulders and neck to have to be turning your head all the time to see the screen and so on.
Excellent. By the way, we're past our halfway mark. You're listening to the Global Product Management Talk I'm Cindy Faye Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N. I'm talking with Woody Zuhl about mob programming. Woody is at W-O-O-D-Y-Z-U-I-L-L. And our archives are at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. We're also out on iTunes and Stitcher, and we have a standalone Android app. Just search for PRODMGMTTALK. And, okay, so our next question is Q5. What are the mechanics of mobbing? And I think you've been speaking to that. But if
I think we've covered most of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then let's move on. You touched at the beginning on what are retrospectives, but I know we could spend a lot of time just focused on what retrospectives. So why don't we spend a little bit more time? One of the things as a product manager is it's really hard. It's the project managers that have the discipline to do the retrospects. But often as product managers, we're shuffling more than one product, and we're on to the next launch or the next new product. It's really hard to take time out to do a full debriefing, which is a missed opportunity. It really requires discipline.
Right. Well, if we look at what we do, and there's this overall concept of what is a retrospective, and then there's the specifics of the kinds of things that we do. So one thing that I've noticed on projects from years past, I've been on projects where, you know, maybe somebody would express to a manager of a team or of a, they would say like a whole bunch of developers, and they'd say, hey, we've got this problem, and we got to figure that out. And then the response would be, we'll figure that out after we're at the end of this project when we have some time. So they do these end-of-project lessons learned sort of meetings, and it's hard to take those forward to the next batch of work because teams get disbanded and moved around and so on. So in the Agile world, the idea is that we were going to frequently do retrospectives or some way of looking back over what we've been doing and learning some lessons from it that we can apply immediately to the work we're currently doing. So that's sort of the basic idea. We frequently reflect, tune, and adjust. And we take that to heart here, and I've learned that a long time ago. So almost everywhere I've worked for a long time, I've tried to get a way to get us to do that frequently. So here, we noticed that if we do retrospectives almost just in time, like if we notice something just happened right in the middle of our work, we might take a few minutes to reflect on it. Now, often when we do retrospectives in a typical manner of the old style post-mortem kind of meetings, you get people start arguing and they start batting blame around and stuff like that. And what a retrospective is really about is gathering the information in a way that people don't need to argue about it. So we sort of have to take a point of view that there's no blame to be given. All we're going to do is look at what we think we could have done better and maybe the things that went not so well and go from there. Decide on a few things we want to improve. The fewer things that you take from that meeting, the more chance you have maybe of acting on them. So we've gotten good at this concept along the way before we started doing the mob programming. Let's look at what we've done this week. Let's look what we did today or whatever time frame. So the retrospective is basically a way to get information without disturbing everybody and then acting on that information. So that means we have to find techniques that let us do that information gathering in a live gathering where we're not feeling we need to defend ourselves. And there's many, many techniques to do that, and some of the, you know, one of the most popular ones and one I like to use is this idea of affinity grouping, where people gather, you write down on post-it notes, the small 3x3 post-it notes. You write down, you know, small ideas about what went well, what didn't go well, what do we want to do better, or whatever. And then you gather them together as under different themes or categories, and you see where the most information is, and that usually tells us what people are most interested in. And I found a correlation often between what went good and what went bad. There will be a lot of what went good on a particular category, and for that same category, there'll be a lot of what went bad. In other words, we've noticed a lot of good going on, but we're already having ideas about how we would want to improve that. So I kind of like to see that happening, and then we just take the actions. So that's sort of, I can't really explain retrospectives very well quickly, but I guess we covered that.
Awesome. So then moving on, key seven is what tools are required for mobbing? Now you explained the keyboards, the projector, the room. Is there anything that isn't obvious? And also, in order to prevent distractions, are members of the team required to turn off their phones or to turn off their other devices? Because I'm constantly distracted,
no.
And that's one of the one of the issues.
Mostly, we don't worry about that sort of stuff. Let's go back before the distractions. We can come back to that if you like. So the other tools that might be needed. One thing that we keep on hand is a hand sanitizer. So every time we come into the keyboard, we de-germ ourselves, and then when we leave the keyboard, we do it again. It's just a way to, and maybe it's a mistaken belief that maybe we can keep from passing too much germs around. That seems again like a mundane thing, but what we found was that the tools that we need are very, very limited, and whenever we notice something needs to be dealt with, we try to deal with it immediately. So we did write our own timer. I'll tell you the story of the timers. Originally, I would use my handheld phone that's got a timer built on it, and I would use that, but we found that we were ignoring the timer. So we got a very loud kitchen timer, one of those electronic ones that beeps really loud and rapidly when you hit your time. And we found we would ignore that too. And then one day one of the team members was across the our work area where other teams are working, and somebody said, "Oh, there goes that dang beeping. What's that going on over there?" And so he rushed back over and said, "Hey, we got to stop using that beeper." So we ended up writing our own little app, and we're going to, I think we've open sourced it, so we're going to write an open source version if other people want to use it. It'll be on GitHub if it isn't already. They're the start of it. So we wrote our own timer that was silent. It just blanks out the screen. We can't ignore that. Everybody goes, "Hey, it's time to switch it up." Initially, we had trouble switching it up because people want to keep their hands on the keyboard. So that's a tool that we like. It's a good timer to keep the randori going, a way to keep everything in order. We do have a wall board, you know, like a whiteboard that we can, we use a little magnetic system, magnetic board that we put our work cards on there. We're always only working on one thing at a time, obviously, so we limit our work in progress that way. Other tools. Yeah, I'm probably missing some. Everybody has to have their own very comfortable chair that they have adjusted for themselves. That way, you know, you're not sitting down in a chair that's going to throw your back out. Let me see. It's limited. There's not much to this. A good fast computer, I'll put that in there. Boy, you want to have the fastest hard drives, the fastest CPU. You want to have good quality monitors because, you know, you're looking at these things all day long. And that means these projectors that we use have to be very high quality. You want to be just the right distance from things, so you need a big enough work area to make it easy for people to wheel their chairs around and to be the correct distance from the monitor. Very nice work tables. Oh, a couple of things we might think of as tools. We use a single email account for our communications to other people from the team to the rest of the company. So almost all emails go through this single email account so that nobody's... we're not losing information because it only got sent to one person. And we sort of do the same thing with the phone. Almost all phone calls related to work are done through a single phone that we use with a speaker phone so that everybody on the team answers the phone, and everybody's aware of that. Or when we make a call, you know, it's from the team to the people we're working with. I hope that helped.
Wow. So It's extreme alignment, which is great.
Yeah, it is. It is, very much so. Yeah, we don't have stand-ups because we don't have to, nobody has to say, well, here's what I worked on yesterday, because if you do say that, everybody's going to say, yeah, of course, because we were working on it with you. So we don't have to talk about separately, you know, here's what I'm going to work on today, and someone else saying, well, here's what I'm going to work on today, because we're all working on the same thing. And we make those decisions together, usually with the people that we're writing the software for. We meet with them constantly. Well, that's another question I think you're going to come up to, so we'll cover that then.
Yeah, so I think you also just answered, you know, what is the workspace set up? So that's great.
Yeah.
And the next question is, what is test-driven development?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, that's a very fundamental extreme programming practice. In the old days, we would often write what you might think of as a test harness to test code as you were writing it. But some very brilliant people figured out a way to do that where it's just part of the project you're writing, so to speak. It's a separate project. But this is essentially what happens. At a very minute level, you write a test for the next very small amount of code you're going to write. It could be as simple as, let's say you were writing a time converter that converts from military time to civil time or whatever you might call it. And so you would say, well, if it's 100 hours in military time, it's going to be 1 o'clock a.m. or whatever in civil time. Whatever the rules are, you write very simple tests to capture the next little rule that you're going to code for. So you make this short test. It may be only 2 or 3 lines of code. And then you write the solution for that. So there's kind of a mantra they use that they use to keep your mind on this. So you're going to get a failing test, which is called red, a passing test, which is called green, and then you're going to refactor. So you write a little failing test, you make that test pass, and then you remove any duplication in the code, and you do that over and over throughout the day. And you end up in the end of the day having essentially full test coverage of the code that you've written, and you can easily prove to yourself that everything works according to the rules as you understand them. So that's essentially what test-driven or test-first development is. Some people think of it as test-driven design. Others think of it as test-driven development. But exactly how we think about it, that's the basic idea. And we follow that practice ourselves. Most of our code has complete coverage. You know, every line of code is covered by a test.
Oh, my goodness, Woody, we do have a few more questions, and I'd love to discuss more about test-driven development. We have come to the end of the hour. It just really, it was just the middle of the hour, and now we're at the end of the hour. So,
yes.
This has been great. I'm very excited to have you come in person and speak in San Francisco on February 4th at Startup Product Talks at Twitter. This is great. This episode will be available for on-demand listening. If you've been following on Twitter, I've been pushing out all the URLs. And I will, after we're done, push out the URLs to all the events we talked about at the beginning of the show, where Woody is speaking and where you can learn more about mob programming and leading Agile retrospectives and what's happening with Agile SoCal. So thanks so much, Woody. Any last remarks?
No, I just really appreciate you inviting me. I had a great time. I'm looking forward to our visits up there in February. It was wonderful, though. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. So thank you. You've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk with Woody Zuhl discussing mob programming. You can follow Woody on his blog at zuhl.us, at Zuill.us. And find out more at mobprogramming.org. Also, follow us at Startup Product, follow the blog, and look in the calendar to see the upcoming events. Be sure to register to get into the Twitter building and to the other events. Some are free, some are paid. And Let's see, what else? The videos from the Startup Product Summit in October will be available at startupproduct.com for pay-per-view, so watch there, and join us at sfproducttalks.com. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host, and coming up next week is David Bland of NEO, who is talking about lean development. He's a prolific speaker and blogger, and very excited to have him on. So join us again, and go to blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, and just follow us there, and you'll get pinged with new episodes coming up. So thanks for listening, and have a great week.
On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love if you found me.